Success stories and interviews with game changers and thought leaders who have overcome both in life and in business. Welcome to Vertical Momentum.
Welcome back, VM Nation. Today's going to be an amazing episode. First, I got a trivia question for you guys. What does murder, forgiveness, and Mr. Les Brown have in common? You're going to find out. Make sure you listen to this episode. Our friend Kate is going to be dropping some serious knowledge. But first, I want to thank our sponsors. As you guys know, our sponsors are 100% veteran 100% of the time. And it's also one of our mutual friends, Miss Tammy Moses, has an amazing podcast. And definitely check her out, thehoardingsolution.com. Check her podcast out. If you love anything to do with hoarding or mental health issues, check out Tammy Moses, The Hoarding Solution. Kate, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much, Richard, for this wonderful opportunity. I'm really appreciative.
I'm so grateful to have you come on. Any friend of Mr. Brown is a friend of mine, and any friend of Tammy's is definitely a friend of mine. So how was your weekend?
It was great, actually. I had a very restful weekend, and it's lovely fall here, and the weather is just beautiful.
Now, where are you located at?
I'm in Canada, near Montreal, Quebec.
Okay, so the weather's nice yet? It hasn't gotten too cold yet?
Not yet, which is surprising because usually this time of year we're freezing already. So I already put on my winter tires, but no, we're still doing well. So I'm counting my blessings.
That's awesome. Forgiveness is one of my favorite subjects. Because, you know, I tell people, because I've been in recovery now over 30 years, and I tell people that the only way that you can ever succeed in life is the three forgivenesses. One, you got to forgive people that have hurt you in the past. Second, you should ask for forgiveness for people that you've hurt. And then third of all is forgiving yourself, which is usually the hardest part of any kind of forgiveness. So I'm really going to love this topic that we're going to be talking about today. So can you tell us a little bit about you, where you're from, where you grew up, and what kind of little girl was Kate?
Yeah, I am actually not even from this area. I'm from Thunder Bay, Ontario, and I grew up there until I was 17 and then left there and went on to Bible college and then decided to leave Thunder Bay to start afresh and to continue my journey of healing after having lost my entire family at 13. And it was all about new beginnings, new fresh look at life. And I wanted to open up to possibilities as opposed to staying stuck within the grief and the doom and gloom as grief can take over your life. So yeah, and then I settled in this area and I am so grateful because it opened up so many doors because I was able to take the risk and challenge myself to get out of my comfort zone. So
I love that. Like I was just listening to, I don't remember who it was, but we were listening to something. As I do my cardio every morning, I listen to a new book on Audible, and they were talking about getting comfortable being uncomfortable. And I think that's exactly what you're talking about, is sometimes you have to get out and just change, take that chance, you know, to step out and do something different. Because what is the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result, right?
Exactly. And that doesn't work for very long or at all, really. So yeah, I definitely am a component of being uncomfortable, because that's where the biggest growth for me has happened. And I'm so grateful that I continue to see changes in my life because of that. And that's the key to overcoming any hurdle or obstacle, but especially grief. Because grief can perplex you to the point that it makes you even want to contemplate, why are you still here? And instead of dwelling on the doom and gloom, I chose to switch that and look at, why do I need to become the purpose of why I'm the only one left in my family to live on the legacy that they would have loved to have lived in and continue to live on? And I'm here to say, because of my two children, I chose life and I chose a path of least resistance, which is a road less traveled for a lot of people. But needless to say, that book that I came across, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, was my catalyst to becoming that journey less traveled, which is also a book too that I came across in my travels. So, and I'm all the component of healing the trauma within and not letting it hold you back. So this is why I am speaking on forgiveness, because that was the biggest catalyst that helped me reach the epiphany of life in itself to this day.
Now, okay, you know, like I believe that, you know, God doesn't waste a hurt. You know, I'm a born again Christian. I try to be a man of faith, even though I know I fail him every day. But, you know, I think that's one thing that I really appreciate about you is you're not afraid to talk about your faith. So I know this is going to be painful, but, you know, I want people to know how you became the woman you are today. So let's hop back to the age of 13. What happened?
Well, thank you. It's not as painful as it might be, because it's many years later. In fact, I just reached the anniversary, which was just on the 5th of November, when my whole world stopped before me at age 13, and just 4 days after my birthday, ironically enough. And I had been prophesied on the evening before, so November 5th, by the two missionaries that ended up dying with my mother as well, and brother. And the two children of the missionaries were the only survivors of the incident that took their life. And it was a tragedy, but ironically enough, I knew instinctively that that was going to be the last day that I saw my mother. And this is what is the hugest lesson that I've learned, that I held the guilt and shame within my core, that it brought health issues and dis-ease in my body, especially in digestion, because I did not like that I was still alive, because why could I not stop my mother? Why did she not listen to me to hold her back and to prevent the accident? It was a transport truck driver who fell asleep behind the wheel that ended up taking all of them out instantly and a whole entire bridge, and only served to be charged $25 a head of what he took their lives, and didn't even show up for his court appearance. That being said, as a young girl, I kept going back to the site and saying, why this? And it was just past where Terry Fox Lookout is. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but anyway, it was a legacy run for him. And ironically, my mother was helping missionaries get out of a situation, because it was a storm that caused their car to break down. And my mother went and picked them up, and they had a service in my grandmother's home, because they were evangelical missionaries traveling from Michigan into Canada, and they traveled around the world. So that being said, I realized that God had anointed me that night, whether or not I was able to stop my mother. But I kept questioning, why God, why couldn't I, you know, prevent this tragedy? And I know everything happens for a reason, and God has his ordained, you know, moments in life that everything happens for a higher purpose. But as a young girl, I questioned a lot. And therefore, this caused me to lack trust in a lot of people. It made me question everything around me. But that being said, I dove in, and being naive and vulnerable as a young girl, I just trusted as best I could in myself. And this is what brought me to the path that I have to give back, not to dwell on the emotions of that I felt I failed or God failed me. Sure, I had to go through the grief and, you know, try to reach out to those in the church. Then I ended up going to Bible college out in Saskatchewan to do a missionary program with Billy Graham Crusade. And it took me to realize, when I was acting in a role play of Maury Blair's life of a child who had been traumatized as a young girl, a young boy, that it made me come alive as a young girl and say, okay, I'm going to take back my power, and I'm going to leash the power within me, as Tony Robbins speaks of, and say, life happens for me, not to me. So that is when I took back my power and decided I had to heal. I had to not just go through the motions of, you know, okay, I'm going to survive this and I'm, you know, going to prove to the world that I can be a better person. But no, instead I had to stop and say, what else is here? So I had to do my journey, and it's a journey less traveled again, that people don't go deep within and say, where is the anger? Where are the emotions that keep us held back? And I was really angry. And I must say, I went through an angry period at God, and I prayed and prayed and prayed and had anointings and went up to the altar. And, you know, God really ministered to me because I was also a Sunday school teacher. I was very active in the church for many, many years. But of course, it made me realize that God had an anointing on my life, yet I was still human. I still had to allow myself to put the pieces of my heart back together. And that took a lot of soul searching, but I didn't allow that to stop me. Instead, yes, I did have a brush of questioning whether I was to be here or not when I went into social work, and I changed the paradigm of the grief and said, okay, there's more here that I can do to help others. So I became qualified in social services and said, okay, what can I do to channel this energy in a positive way? Instead of being the victim, I chose to be the victor. And ironically enough, my brother who died with my mom, his middle name was Victor. So I feel, as a lot of people know, that those that cross over are still with us energetically and spiritually. In our prayers, we call out to God, we call out to whoever, the archangels or spiritual realm that we want to, but I really feel that I've never really been alone. And that's what's given me comfort. That's what's given me hope. And I've helped many people heal, knowing that, to create peace within themselves and that safety and security to know that grief is not to be lived continuously. It is a cycle and you go through it, but you have to allow yourself to truly come through it, not to stay there, if that makes sense.
Yep. Now, you said your mother and your brother passed. Where yes. was your father in this whole situation?
Then my father actually died in a coma. My father and I did not have a close relationship over the years because of childhood trauma. That being said, I still did see him, but it wasn't a close, intimate one. But long story short, I was called one day saying that he had died in a coma. No one could reach me prior to it. And it turned out that it was an assisted suicide. He was a diabetic, and his girlfriend at the time had a son who gave him three bottles of potent alcohol, vodka, rum, and I think it was gin. And he fell and hit his head and went into a coma. And so needless to say, I did not get to say my goodbyes. I did it energetically when I went there, and I wrote him a letter and read it out to him, which is, I really encourage your listeners to do, because it still heals the grief. But that being said, I had to forgive that individual for doing that. And then in turn, taking a lot from me of my father's belongings. And I just had to surrender to hear life was taken from me at a young age. And I believe my father was suffering from deep depression because of the loss of the relationship with my mom. And he really went through, because my brother was his son as well. And I think he really went through real deep depression and didn't reach out for help. So this is why I chose again to become the catalyst of a mental health advocate here in Canada, because I first and foremost had a brush of suicide myself in my own family. And then myself, even before I went into social work, to say, like, where is my life? Where is my purpose? So, yeah. So my father, and then my other brother was killed as well. And that went through the courts for some time because it was intentional. It was videotaped, and my brother was on his bicycle and was driven down, and second degree murder charges were laid immediately after 27 hours of finding the individual. And lo and behold, he did get off because it's better in the court system as they recognize that you need to be a father. It's better to be a father than to be behind bars. And he had six children, so he was let go of the responsibility, even though my brother left five children behind. And I realized in all of this process that going before the courts and trying to plead with them justice, that really I was trying to let go of the compound grief that I hadn't really dealt with over the years with all my family's death, and that really a person can do their best to help the system change, but really they have to change themselves and they have to want to change. So that's what then I channeled the energy into becoming the catalyst that I am to help other people change, because I went to that depth of my core to say, what else is here that I need to change? And it was my perspective that hurt people do not need to hurt people. And Les Brown, in his interview with me just recently on the book that I'm publishing with him, that's releasing in December, said, you know, Kate, thank you so much, because this is what I've been trying to speak to the world about, that hurt people do not need to hurt people. And that's why I'm on this path, this mission to save a billion lives, because we do not need to hurt people just because we have been hurt. And I've had compounded hurt and grief and loss and trauma and tragedy that if I stayed there, I would not be the catalyst of change in my own life, let alone others. So I chose to change that.
So, you know, now I'm thinking back, because anytime I interview somebody, I close my eyes and it's like watching a movie. And I'm trying to think, you know, you're a 13-year-old girl, you know, just lost your brother and your mother. And where do you go the next couple of days? You know, do you have a place to go to? Are you homeless? You go home and there's nobody there except memories. What was that like?
Wow. You're bringing me back to a moment that was so scary, that was so isolating, and definitely it felt like I was abandoned by the world. And yes, I was lost. Sure, I had the church, but even my own family, who my grandmother's also, well, originally my grandmother was still alive until December 20th, just 5 days before Christmas. So then I had another compound grief right after that. So my mother died November 5th, then my grandmother died, which is my rescuer all throughout my life. She died 5 days before Christmas. So these months of October, November, and December are very emotional, we'll just say. And I didn't really breathe very much. And that's what I realized. I was holding my breath all while I was trying to still raise myself, because I was forced to raise myself quickly. I decided to I fought against not going into the Children Protective Services because of my age. I was given an opportunity to go into a family within my church. That I did, but sadly to say, it wasn't the safest for me. It turned out was a temporary opportunity, I guess, at the time, but it wasn't the best for me. But it probably still saved me from the system, we'll just say, of hopping from one orphanage home or CAS home after another. But I took back my life and spoke up, and the church basically intervened to some degree, but they also didn't know how to help an orphan. So I was left feeling fragmented and in bits and pieces in my heart. And this is what took me on a spiral of then saying, okay, how can I find a refuge, a safety? And it took me out of Thunder Bay. It took me that I couldn't be with people that I didn't know would betray me and would hurt me as a young girl. And I went on to finish high school, believe it or not. I was only one credit short of grade 13, but I decided I had to stop going to school. I needed to, not challenge myself mentally anymore. I was breaking down emotionally because I just was driven. I was a workaholic. I became a perfectionist. I became a workaholic to the point that I just did three jobs nonstop. And as a young girl, I had to provide for myself. There was no one to provide for me. There was no money. There was no resources. So I had to pull in what I could. And so I had the no quitter attitude. I was unstoppable as a young girl. And even still, until the fateful day that I talk about in my book with Les Brown, that brought me down on my knees.
Okay, so now my come to Jesus moment, as they say, was the morning of September 11th, 2001. That's the day that broke me and I changed the whole trajectory of my life. What was your come to Jesus moment? What was that moment?
Well, thank you for that question, because I thought I had done that aha moment when I was a young girl and was baptized and did all of that. But I believe I was doing all of the motions as my mother was trying to purify my soul after having lived so much trauma. And it's like she brought me into many religions before she died to prepare me for the great adventure that I've been on ever since she left me.
Talking about, your mom and taking you to all these different religions, was there trauma before all this happened when you were a younger girl? What kind of trauma was there?
Yes, I had a lot of trauma as a child. As I said earlier, my father and mother divorced when I was only 5 months old. So I went through being raped, and then she went on to having a relationship with another man who then is the father of my last brother who was killed or murdered. And that being said, I finally screamed to the point that my mother heard me after being carried out of my bed and brought into his bed, that she finally said enough's enough. So this is what brought her to bring me as a little girl to purify me again after having gone through trauma, because she realized that herself, having been a baby of the family and traumatized herself from her own father, having been a PTSD survivor from the war, she enacted that behavior out on me. So that in turn made me the victim of that energy. We'll just put it that way. And this man was very hurtful. And fast forward to us going from church to church. I was 10 years of age when this happened, finally when it stopped. So it was between 4 and 10 years of age. And the trauma perpetuated me to being silent. I became very silent. And this is why I title my chapter Silently Screaming, because I was never heard. I was never validated. I was not even seen. My mother would hide me in the background when any time there were social gatherings because she was trying to protect me. And she became very vigilant in doing this. But however, when we went to the churches, that was when she wanted me to be seen, because I started speaking in tongues. I started being asked for a lot of different involvement in the church because of my, pure innocence of truly wanting to serve God and also be of a servant's heart to help children and give back. And so we became very evangelical in our ministry. Even we brought in homeless people into our home. We did a lot of even Free Clothing Depot and so forth. So that being said, my mother looked at me as having many gifts. And that was the first time that I felt love. So the ages between 10 and 13 prior to her dying, I felt I had a renewness of who I was. And I went about life saying, okay, like I'm going to keep being the little girl as much as I can, but there was a part of me that had to be mature. But I was always praying on my knees to the point that I would fall asleep. praying, because I had a ritual where I'd get up in the morning, do my routine, then pray before I went to school. And my mother had us in a non-denomination. It was a Brethren Christian school we went to before her death for those 3 years. So I was brought up to believe in God, to believe that everything happens, God ordains it, it's divine guidance, however you want to look at it, because all the different indoctrinations. So I just, okay, accepted it along the way. So the fateful day of when she was taken, I didn't know which religion to really go with, but we were practicing at that time Pentecostal. And before that, it was non-denominational. So I say to this day that I'm more spiritual than I am one religion, but I resonate with all of them because of the exposure that my mother gave me, because she truly wanted me to have my soul saved, for me to feel peace again, to feel freedom, to not be in bondage of the perplexity of what trauma can do on one's life. And that trauma can stay stuck in your cells, which it did to some degree until the fateful morning that I fell down on my knees, that I talk about in the book with Les Brown, in front of my new home, as a result of calling it the perfect storm. And this perfect storm halted me, something from the top of my head all the way down to my core, to make me realize that I thought I had trusted God. I thought I had believed in him and had faith as a grain of mustard seed. But that day I realized I had no one to help me but myself. I had no one to pick me up from that tree falling on my home and then falling on me. And I had to be accountable. I had to take responsibility back, and I had to be the sole survivor to do that. And no one was going to rescue me. Up until then, I was seeking outside of myself. But that day I had to go within, and I had to pick myself up and brush myself off and say, okay, I just started my new life on my own. I just had hip surgery 3 months prior to that. And I was the only one that was going to help myself. So I reached out the best I could. And it was on Facebook, ironically enough. And my friend came and took me to the hospital eventually after I got this tree taken care of in my new home, believe it or not, that I had just started in. After leaving a marriage that was not fulfilling anymore, after years of trying to work it out and being left again all by myself, and realized that looking in the mirror at myself, I didn't love who I truly was. My cup was empty. I truly had to go within and say, what else do I need to do to surrender? And God, of course, took me on a path of least resistance again and a road less traveled for myself to go within and do breath work. It started with breath work. Then it went into finding the powerful neuro-linguistic programming certification that I recertified in, that opened my cells to an epiphany of events that I hadn't healed in my childhood, that I hadn't healed even in my marriage, that I brought into my marriage that failed. And so I continue to peel back the layers, and I continue to see that I thought I had healed, but I was giving my energy and my intentions to everybody else, but I had forgotten about who that little inner child was within me. And I had grown up so fast that that little girl, Kathy, that I was called as a little girl, did not know who she belonged to, who she even was going to become, let alone how she was going to do it on her own, physically, mentally, and emotionally. Spiritually, I knew my belief systems were strong, but yet I even questioned that. I questioned why. Why else? And I let out the biggest scream that day. Can you only imagine? A tree falling on your head. I don't want anyone to have to go there. But that being said, I had to. I had no other choice. That I felt in that moment that it was a gift. It was an opportunity to say, okay, what else can I do to heal? And I had no other choice but to navigate, to see my light within, because I couldn't even look at daylight, let alone sunlight. And it's been quite a journey. And that was just a couple years before COVID. And then COVID hit, and I felt like the reality of what everyone was going through these last 2 years, I had already been living. all, well, at least the last couple of years prior to, of going within. And now that journey has brought me to much more deep insight to the power of healing the inner child. And it's not talked about enough, but in the churches, we give faith to God, but that faith comes from God in creating us. And when we can rebirth and welcome that innocence back in and learn to self-love, that is the journey that really brings transformation.
You know, and I really love that. Now, you know, this podcast gets listened to by many veterans, first responders. And one thing that, you know, including me, that's something that I really struggled with a lot, survivor's guilt. You know, like a lot of times, you know, I had a friend of mine that I was helping out and he committed suicide and I took it all on my shoulders. And then a lot of guys that, you know, we served with, you know, got killed over in Afghanistan or Iraq. And we're, a lot of us are dealing with survivor's guilt. So talk to us a little bit about how to heal from survivor's guilt.
Wow. Thank you for bringing that up. And this is really dear to my heart because I'm a component of helping other survivors with post-traumatic stress disorder, because that's also in turn what I was labeled with. And ironically enough, both my grandfather and my father-in-law were both Army vets themselves. And I sat as a little girl. In fact, my grandfather called me Chatty Cathy because we would always talk about his war times in the garden. That's how he healed. When he came back, he was actually discharged because he had post-traumatic stress disorder. So I became a very good listener at a young age. And this is what was the catalyst to make me go into becoming a Canadian mental health advocate, because I felt that listening and validating and honoring the individual that goes through trauma is the first and foremost important part of the journey. And I give back continuously, even on Clubhouse for this, because it's an app where people just listen and they get really ministered to. I have quite a following on Clubhouse because of that. And my father-in-law, who also was a survivor, and he was in the Air Cadet, and he actually survived after being hung, like having to parachute out of a plane and being hung on a windowsill. I listened to many of his stories as well, and it just brought me to tears to hear the survivor and the thriver still, even though they came back wounded, like myself over the years, wounded, but yet not bruised to the point that you don't keep going on. The bruise stays underneath the surface of your trauma, but until you let it out and you speak of it and you let people hear and be part of the story, that is when truly transformation can happen. And that's what I've even done in my own life in starting to write books. Now, this is my second international best-selling book that I've done with Les Brown. My first one was Ignite Possibilities. And I talk about that life is full of possibilities, but if we stay stuck in our trauma, even though the stories keep happening in our mind and we wake up with tremors, we wake up with, you know, night terrors and all of those different post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms, I have really found the catalyst to healing is through working with the vagus nerve and healing with the vagus nerve. And if people want to know more information, they can reach out. But this is where is the power in claiming back the freedom of peace again in your life, because it allows you to not stay in that fight, flight, or freeze state that post-traumatic stress disorder does on the body. That not only was I a witness of it as a young girl, but then became trained in it as I further went into my studies. And I continue to get certified in a lot of different modalities to help trauma survivors, because that's my passion, because I feel I have gone through quite a bit of trauma, and even still to this day say that I have, you know, some days better coping mechanisms than others. I have to do a lot of mental, you know, self-talk, self-affirmations, doing my own processing of neuro-linguistic programming to change the belief systems when I get tested and questioned whether I'm on the right path or not. I don't let the mind control me. That's the biggest thing. When you go through trauma, you're continuously going through a cycle of perpetual, defragmenting your processing, because it's the mind is like a computer. It slows down when it gets all conjumbled with, you know, so much memory cells that it can't function at a fast pace. So you have to defrag it. You have to break it down into clusters to make it, run smoother. And that's what I've had to do with releasing all the compressed memories that were stored in my body, because I'm actually a survivor of near-death experiences as well. I've had a few operations that I almost died on the operating table, to even car accidents that I almost, I'm a walking miracle. Even the doctors say that with the tree, but I am here to say post-traumatic stress disorder does not have to define you. It can refine you. And I'm here to say that I'm on that path to help others be refined, because once you can put your association to where the pain and suffering, like you say, the guilt, it's not yours to hold onto. You cannot take somebody's pain away. They have to want to be the responsible one, like me, to take back and claim back life and say, okay, I am bigger than the circumstances that were given to me. I am better. I want to be better, and I choose better and not be bitter anymore over life. When you hold on to that guilt, you're bitter at life. And that taste buds that you have of that bitterness keeps you fermenting internally in your anguish and in your pain and suffering. Does that help? And there's quite a process to it, but I've really embraced the inner self-love and self-compassion, which then in turn leads to the self-forgiveness. The forgiveness for yourself is where the true healing comes from, not necessarily for the perpetrators, like all those that took my family in different capacity, of course, but I'm not here to say that I'm God, and by any means. I'm here just to say that that freedom that God gave us for our life to begin with is freedom in expression, freedom in letting out the painful stories, because if you don't let them out of your cells, they'll stay stuck and they'll keep your cells continuously bringing negative circumstances to yourself. Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense. Now, you know, I've interviewed a lot of doctors, psychologists, and one term that I've come to really embrace is post-traumatic growth instead of post-traumatic stress. And I love what you're talking about. So now talk to us about how it all became about to knowing Mr. Brown, what it was like writing your book, because I wrote my book, and for me, it was very, very cathartic, but it also ripped open a lot of wounds for me to heal. So it was a very healing thing. So please talk about those two things.
Thank you for that. Ironically enough, again, meditation, manifestation, 100+%. I was on a mission that fateful day when I fell on my knees to realize literally that I had no ego left in me in that moment. I did not know. I had actually a producer that wants to make my life out of a movie and said to me, "Why did you not call the police?" Well, I was a young girl that was afraid of the police, and I did not trust anybody. So I realized that I had to trust myself. So by doing that, I had to go within, and I had to trust myself to meditate. And that wasn't easy, being a post-traumatic stress survivor, learning to connect the breath and the parasympathetic nervous system, and learning to work with the vagus nerve and allow myself to go deep within was a new concept because it wasn't taught as a child. But yet, as I spoke to Les Brown, I said to him that actually with my mother being my worst enemy, because she was very physically, emotionally, and psychologically abusive before she brought me into the church, that she actually was my best catalyst to my healing, because she taught me to be seen and not heard, which is a form of meditation where I just listened. I just went within and had to listen to everything around me like a blind person has to. I became sensory acuity in everything. So that being said, I worked for over 20 years in education with special needs. And knowing Les Brown, having a background of being diagnosed with developmental delays, it resonated with me. And I felt, that his path came across my path because the publisher that I released my first book called Ignite Possibilities was given an opportunity to work with him. And because I was already a published author with her, I then had that given to me as a gift. Opportunity, of course, the opportunity knocked and I could not resist because I resonated with his story, not only being an orphan, but, knowing the value of family like he does and the spiritual mentorship that he's done for me over the years as I've listened to many of his work, I resonated with all of it. So it basically manifested without me having to do very much, if that makes sense, because I really just surrendered. I trusted in everything that divinely showed up for me as I kept healing with doing one process one process needed to lead into the other to peel back the layers, because I did not even have my voice, believe it or not, after that tree fell on my head. And so I sought out communities and I created communities, and I even created many rooms on Clubhouse to help people. I was about giving back. I was not about making any money. I was about just give. And my mother taught me that. So I realized that my mother was my best catalyst in all of this spiritually, because look at Les Brown, found his biological mother. And I resonated with his story as now he's going public with it, that he just reunited. And it made me on a spiritual level be able to go to the depth to forgive my mother too, and to find that forgiveness. As much as I knew my mother was trying to save my soul and bringing me into religions, but she taught me as a little girl to be that healer myself, of finding resources and pulling in resources for me to get to where I am today and not want to take my life anymore, and to rise up and to actually help others. Because, my own father was, a catalyst of suicide, and also my own son had a brush of that as well. And I'm here to say that I choose consciously and subconsciously, I am doing the work to clear those negative beliefs and those limiting structures that were installed because of the trauma. And I choose to step out of that. And in writing the books, that was, like you said, a catalyst for my growth. And I'm still writing a solo book, but my next book is actually all about forgiveness, releasing in the new year. And the power of the forgiveness is where everybody's feeling we need to get to in this world, because we're too much at war instead of at peace. And if we can get to peace within ourselves, then it can emanate to the world, because we're universally connected as one force. But we forget that. We forget that it's not us as our ego. It's spiritually we're one in likeness of everyone. And I studied shamanism in my studies along the way to understand different cultures, because we're all brought together on this planet for a reason. And, Les Brown, of course, has been speaking for years and already a four-time cancer survivor. And like he said, he is the catalyst to show that if you can smile, you can look up. And like his quote is, if you fall down looking on sorry, if you fall down on your back, look up because you can get up. And that's what truly my life has been about. Even though I fell down on my knees many times, I still realize that my faith as that little grain of mustard seed is what gives me the hope every single day to wake up that I can change one more life, one at a time. But if I have my voice, that is the biggest catalyst to help others. And writing, believe it or not, was my catalyst first. I couldn't write it physically. I had to speak it. And my publisher helped me with that in discovering the Otter app, because I couldn't, every time I started to type, there was just some block there. And even though I worked in education for years, but as soon as I started to speak it, it just flowed like a melody. And I believe that that is what doing the program with Les Brown has really allowed me to step into that power of speaking like he's done, and his son, John Leslie's son, and, you know, and everybody that we're part of this community is doing. We're speaking from that place of empowerment. And this book is going to change many lives because it's transformed us that are in the book, but it's also living a legacy that we want to carry on for our children, but also for the world to break free from their limiting beliefs so they can see their potential too, because life is too short and it needs to be lived. And I want to make suicide extinct. That is my mission.
I love it. So how do we find you? How do we find your book? How can we support your mission?
Well, I have it releasing on a summit coming up in December. And it will be, you can follow me on Facebook as Kate Frastak, but also in the Ignite community, we have it going to be released in a summit with Les Brown coming up on December 10th. And it is to be bought on Amazon, Kobo, and what's the other one? Barnes and Noble. You can get it on there. It's going to be released the beginning of December, but you can pre-order it now. You can even get the ebook right now. And there's opportunity to get it if you go to the summit. It's included in your summit package. And that's the best way to get it, because I believe those ones are autographed right from Les Brown himself. And you also have an opportunity to win a coaching session with Les Brown if you attend the summit. And also there's a text number to text in that possibility to win a coaching one-on-one session with Les Brown and the publisher, and ignite your own possibility of becoming a writer as well with Ignite Possibilities, who is already a 16-time international best-selling publisher. So I am just so grateful that I've opened up my infinite possibilities with manifesting through meditation. And I just want to say this last acronym for your listeners so they can really go deep within themselves. Is that okay, Richard?
Sure.
It's an acronym that I'm going to speak on the summit, and it's called FORGIVE. And as acronyms stick, like Jim Quick speaks of, who is also a brain trauma survivor like myself, after the tree falling on my head, I realized that I had to relearn things and I had to work with my memory. So acronyms really stick and they stay with us. And this one's called FORGIVE. And I've broken it down so people can see it simplistically, that the F stands for freedom to be unshakable in your faith, but in belief in yourself that you are worthy to be here and you are the gift to the world. So you're not alone, even though God is there omnipotent, you are also guided along your way. There's all kinds of realms of spirituality that confirm that we're never alone, even though we might physically feel that, but we're not. The O in FORGIVE is staying open with your heart to create self-love first. We must challenge ourselves to say, what is the dis-ease in our body and what do we need to go within to heal that? And neuro-linguistic programming, hypnosis, and a lot of vagus nerve stim and tapping, there's all different forms of therapies that help, cognitive behavior therapy, EMDR, that helps post-traumatic stress disorder, that allows the peace to come into your heart. So I challenge everybody to allow themselves to surrender to this and not feel like they have to do it alone. That being said, when you can do that, the R in forgiveness is open yourself to receive God's ordained guidance in your life, that you will be guided to the right practitioners, the religion, the people that are brought into your life is happening for you, not to you. So just open up to that gift of forgiveness and allow your heart to be ministered to, because G in forgive is the gift you are to the world, that if you allow yourself to embrace you as the gift, then you will have more gifts given to you. And that's what I simply did by allowing myself to open up to possibilities. And this is why now I'm working with Les Brown and an amazing publisher to allow my voice to be heard. And then the I is, which has been my biggest lesson to work on, is following my intuition. And that was a work in progress, because like I said earlier, as I opened up myself to allow myself to be guided and to trust that every step of the way, even though I had to go through healing the trauma, and I still do layer after layer, there's different presentations of it from time to time, but I am the person that can say I walk my talk and I truly keep showing up for myself and take responsibility. So listen to that inner knowing, that inner eye within yourself of the God whisperer, and it will bring you much wisdom and much growth along the way. And the V stands for value. Value yourself enough that God brought you into this world. You chose your parents. You chose your path as that little faith of mustard seed that brought you in of love to your parents. You can then say to yourself, you are enough. You are truly that component of the Ho'oponopono prayer. Say it every day. I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. I love you. I thank you. That gift of that prayer every single day, I do it to myself and I put my hands on my heart and I feel the love that I give back to myself that then I want to emanate to the world. And that is where the E comes in, is because once we can give ourselves the empathy and allow ourselves to go into the core of our emotions of anger, sadness, fear, guilt, and shame, and heal them at the core level with neurolinguistic programming of releasing those cells from being stuck, then we can put ourselves first and we can then become the catalyst to help others do the same. And that change is so transformative because we can, like you said earlier, become uncomfortable in order to be that change that you need to be in the world, because the world needs you. You are the gift. And like you are, Richard, to me right now, and Les Brown was to me, and JB Owen as a publisher, to allow all of this to come full fruition. But first, I had to embrace my gift of my life, and I'm worth it, and so are you. So thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you so much for everything you're doing, especially for people that are struggling with PTS, you know, with a whole host of other things, especially now during COVID. People need hope. And one thing I think that's one thing you do very well is you give people hope again. So I want to thank our sponsor, Tammy Moses from The Hoarding Solution. If you know anybody that's struggling with hoarding issues, check out Tammy Moses and The Hoarding Solution. Have an amazing week and keep on kicking butt. You're doing amazing things. And when you do talk to Mr. Brown, tell him I said I'm praying for him and he's always in my thoughts and prayers.
I appreciate that, Richard. I will post your link in my website of this podcast and take him also in it. Sacred Roots Coaching is my website. So look out for that. I will make sure he gets it and it gets ministered to a lot of people. So thank you so much, Richard, for this.
Well, have an amazing week.
Stay blessed. Thank you, Richard. Much love.
Thank you for joining us today. Please hit subscribe and share. Please feel free to leave us a comment.